I am certain that my fellow Americans expect that on my induction into the presidency, I will address them with the candor and the decision which the present situation of our peoples impels. This is preeminently the time to speak the truth, the whole truth, frankly and boldly. Nor need we shrink from honestly facing conditions in our country today. This great nation will endure as it has endured, will revive, and will prosper. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. Nameless, unreasoning, unjustified terror which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. In every dark hour of our national life, a leadership of frankness and vigor has met with that understanding and support of the people themselves, which is essential to victory. And I am convinced that you will again give that support to leadership in these critical days. Some of you history experts may know that's from Franklin Roosevelt's 1933 inaugural address. It contains one of the most famous quotes thought of when we mention the word fear. And I thought you would enjoy hearing the context of that famous quote as we use that quote to introduce to you today the sermon topic, the topic of fear. Recently we had a sermon on the topic of Bible prophecy, and we looked at events between now and then, and that's what we called the sermon. And when we think of that, many of us have feelings of fear. Mr. Jim Franks, president of Church of God Worldwide Association, recently wrote to us about this, and he said this in a recent member letter, quote, "I believe in my lifetime I have never seen world conditions as bad as they are today. Prophetically, we see the stage being set for the events described in Daniel 11, verse 40 through 45, which takes place at the time of the end. It involves the king of the south and the king of the north. The king of the south will come from an Arab country or group of countries who will attack a union of European nations. Throw into this mix the development of nuclear weapons in Iran, and one would have to be blind not to see the handwriting on the wall." When we read things like this or hear about it, someone like Mr. Franks even warning us that time is short, many have feelings of apprehension, of fear. And yet God says, fear not. Why? Why does God use the phrase, fear not, or do not fear, so many times? That's what I want to talk with you about today in the sermon. And so that will be our title. Why does God say, fear not? I believe it's because there are fearful things that we need to face. We are facing some. And yes, I know we've been talking a lot about this lately. I think it's very timely that we do it. And it is natural for us to be fearful, to fear danger, to fear anything that would threaten our normal life around us, but that would threaten the peace and calm of the world that we live in. And so when we continuously are hearing these things, day after day, we hear about things that are coming that are going to impact our normal day-to-day routine. Things will change as we know them. Then fear enters the picture. We're nervous, we're apprehensive. But yet over and over, the pages of the Bible tell us, do not fear. And we're fearing anyway. So as we look at this today, I think it's important for us to understand the context of when God has told His people, do not fear. What was going on? That's why I read the context of that famous quote, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself. We're going to look at context today of when God says, do not fear. The first place in the New King James Version of the Bible that we see the phrase, fear not, is found in Genesis 21. So come with me there. Genesis 21. Verse This is the account where Abraham sent Hagar away into the wilderness with her son Ishmael. Things were not going well in the household. There was a lot of conflict. And when they were sent away, things looked pretty bleak for both of them, Hagar and Ishmael. And I suspect that Hagar was very fearful. She was perhaps bitterly disappointed at what Abraham had done. None of this made sense to her. How could you do this to me? How could you do this to your child? How could Abraham's God allow that to happen? What kind of a God is this that would send us away to die? In verse 16, then she went and sat down across from the child at a distance of about a bow shot, because she said to herself, I don't want to see the death of my son. I can't bear to watch. You can imagine, this is heartrending. The anguish of a mother. And so she sat opposite him and she lifted up her voice and she cried. This will tear your heart out when you think of the reality of this situation, what was going on. I'm Abraham's. This is Abraham's child. Verse 17, things begin to change. God heard the voice of the lad. And then the angel of God called out to Hagar out of heaven and said to her, what ails you, Hagar? What's wrong? Fear not, for God has heard the voice of the lad where he is. Arise, lift up the lad, hold him with your hand. I will make of him a great nation. Very unexpected. We have an unexpected outcome at a time of great fear and hopelessness and despair and anguish. This wasn't what Hagar thought was going to happen. She was prepared to watch her son die and then die herself. She had given up on Abraham and on the God of Abraham. I'm here to die. And then something happens that she could have never predicted, never experienced. Notice what happens to Ishmael. Verse 19. Then God opened her eyes, and she saw a well of water, and she went and filled the skin with water and gave the lad a drink. And so God was with the lad, and he grew up and dwelt in the wilderness, and he became a skillful archer. He dwelt in the wilderness of Paran, and his mother took a wife for him from the land of Egypt. So in just a few short verses, we go from certain death in the wilderness to becoming a skillful archer, growing up, mom arranging for a beautiful Egyptian wife as your bride. So Hagar and Ishmael really had nothing to fear, did they? God says, do not fear. Well, of course they were going to fear. Look at the situation they were in. It didn't look like it at the time. She was certain that death was coming quickly to them. But here we see, God had something else in mind for them. Perhaps the most well-known story, not necessarily in time sequence here, perhaps the best well-known story of fear in the face of certain annihilation of a people is the story of the Israelites being trapped at the edge of the Red Sea after they escaped Egypt. The account is in Genesis 14. I know we've read it before. I know you're familiar with the story, but I think in context of the sermon today, let's read it anyway. Verse 8, the Lord hardened the heart of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and he pursued the children of Israel. And the children of Israel went out with boldness. They were confident at the time they're leaving. Things look great. But the Egyptians pursued them, all the horses and chariots of Pharaoh, his horsemen and his army, and overtook them, camping by the sea beside Pihahiroth, beside Baal-Zephon. Okay, that wasn't expected. They thought, God's with us, we're being delivered, and we're going out of Egypt. In the wrong place? Exodus, okay, Exodus. Yeah, that didn't sound right. Well, I've got Genesis in my notes. All right. Thank you. Verse 10. And when Pharaoh drew near, The children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, and they were very afraid. That's one of the understatements of the Bible. And the children of Israel cried out to the Lord, and they said to Moses, "It's hopeless. You know, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us to bring us up out of Egypt? Didn't we tell you? Isn't this not the word that we told you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone, that we might serve the Egyptians'?" They didn't want to do that. Their short-term memory had changed. Historical revisionism, right? "For it would have been better for us to serve the Egyptians than for us to die in this wilderness." But Moses says to the people, "Do not be afraid. Stand still, see the salvation of the Lord, which he will accomplish for you today. For these Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace." Now you talk about an unexpected outcome in the face of certain death. You don't expect the sea to open up, to divide, and you're able, you know, the great wind comes, dries it up, and you can walk across. That wasn't something you thought was going to happen. But God says, "Do not fear. Just trust me. The Lord will fight for you. You shall hold your peace." That means we should keep some peace, have some peace in the first place that we can hold on to. Very unexpected. And we look at stories like this for a reason. They are lessons for us. Because have we ever been in the depths of despair and hopelessness thinking there is no way out? I know for a fact that some of you have. Now perhaps, if we haven't in the past had feelings like that, maybe we'll face them yet in the future. But all along, God is telling us the same thing. Fear not. Do not be afraid. So are we going to listen to that, following the examples that we've seen, total faith and trust, or will we instead be filled with that logical fear? Normal circumstances would tell us, and our body chemistry and our reaction says, now's the time to be afraid. Fear not. Should we not expect unexpected deliverance? Something that we could not have imagined on our own. Because that's the examples that we've got in the past. Unexpected deliverance at a time that we didn't expect it. Well, the next place we're going to see this phrase used is in Isaiah 41. This is a millennial setting, actually. I believe that it is. It can be used as a millennial setting. Isaiah 41. Let's set the scene a little bit. Imagine what it's going to be like during the Great Tribulation. Think of the scene after the devastation of the Great Tribulation. What the people have experienced, what they fear they might yet experience, because I think the people of the Great Tribulation will not think, "Oh, things are about to get better." Things are looking worse every day. So the surviving people at that time from the United States, Britain, and any other English-speaking nations, let's just focus there for now. Of course, this applies to other people as well. But they are traumatized, and they are in despair, and they are hopeless. Although they have been listening, I hope, to some of them, to a message that's been being proclaimed, not necessarily believing that message. They have been living in constant fear for their lives for the past 3.5 years, wondering, how have we managed to survive up to this point? Yes, somehow we have, and here we are. For the most part, they had been scattered abroad. Now, after this event has happened, this bright light, this change, this something has happened, they now find themselves being gathered to the nation of Israel, of all places. That's where all the trouble was focused. Now we're being brought here, and they're about to receive a message, a special message from Jesus Christ, who, as the hours pass, they are beginning to understand it is Jesus Christ who is now ruling in Jerusalem. And the message is being sent from Him. Isaiah 41 and verse 8. But you, Israel, you are my servant, Jacob, whom I have chosen. You, the descendants of Abraham, who is my friend. You, whom I've taken away from the ends of the earth, I've called from the farthest regions. And I've said to you, you are my servant. I've chosen you. I did not cast you away. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will uphold you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Behold, all those who were incensed against you shall be ashamed and disgraced. They shall be as nothing. Those who strive with you shall perish. You'll seek them, you won't find them. Those who contended with you, those who war against you, they shall be as nothing, as a non-existent thing. For I, the Lord your God, I will hold your right hand, saying to you, fear not, I will help you. Fear not, you worm Jacob, you men of Israel, I will help you, says the Lord, and your Redeemer, the Holy One of Israel. Imagine hearing those words at that time. Now, they might not like hearing themselves referred to as a worm. Then again, they may feel like one after what they've been through. There is a time of national repentance and humility coming. And most of these people, these survivors, will have humble, repentant attitudes, and they will rejoice at hearing these words proclaimed to them. And no doubt they had been in great fear of what was going to happen to them when they arrived back at Jerusalem. They were being gathered from who knows where. And somehow they're gathered back to Jerusalem. What's going to happen there? Is that it? But imagine the relief of hearing this unexpected news. This news about redemption from none other than Jesus Christ Himself. You talk about confusion. Perplexing. I don't understand. And as news of this spreads, again, this was not something that the survivors around the world were expecting either. They didn't expect the return of the Son of God, of Jesus Christ, to come to earth. Many had expected a rapture to heaven. How come I'm not at the pearly gates? Or perhaps Allah providing those 70 virgins. Or I expected to be out grazing in the field as a cow. Reincarnation. Unexpected. What about us? Do we expect this same kind of help that we're talking about that they are going to receive then? Do we expect that same kind of help in our lives today? Because we are God's chosen people today. His called out ones. We don't have to wait for that time. We don't have to wait for the beginning of the millennium to have Jesus Christ say those same words to us today. So all we can do, we could just reinsert the word church instead of Jacob or Israel above. And that same passage would apply to us today. If we read it again, we could hear God telling us to the church, to the congregation right here today. This is what He would say. Fear not, for I am with you. Be not dismayed. I am your God. I will strengthen you. Yes, I will help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. Those who contend with you, those who war against you, will be as nothing, as a non-existent thing. For I, the Lord your God, will hold your right hand. Remember how we talk about reaching up and holding God's hand? And I will say to you, fear not. I will help you. And what we're asking is, do we believe that? Do we have the courage to face things just as if God is right here, right now, beside us, telling us these very words? Daniel chapter 10. The next passage we'll examine. In vision here, Daniel sees this great angelic being. Perhaps, as some may speculate, it might have been Gabriel. Doesn't really matter, doesn't really say. But this angel is portrayed in great majestic power and brightness. Daniel chapter 10, we'll pick it up in verse 5. I lifted my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with gold of Uphaz. His body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning, his eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color, and the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. Very glorious. Similar to the description of Jesus Christ we have in Revelation. But not quite, I don't think. But then notice in verse 10, let's notice what the angel does. Suddenly a hand touched me, and it made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. And he said to me, O Daniel, man greatly beloved. Daniel, understand the words that I speak to you. Stand up, for I have now been sent to you, Daniel. And while he was speaking this word to me, I stood there trembling. So in this setting, Daniel is terrified. We would be too. But now comes a significant point that we need to notice. Verse 12. This great being, this angelic being, says to me, do not fear, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart to understand, and to humble yourself before your God. From the first day you did that, Daniel, your words were heard. And I've come here because of your words. Now that's amazing. That should give us tremendous hope and confidence before God. Because we need to understand, God wants to see that same attitude in us. He responds to that. Like we respond to our children, the positive attitude in our children, the humility in our children. God wants us to set our heart to understand. And we know that He wants us to humble ourselves before Him. And if we do that with humility and setting our heart to understand, we can expect the same result. We can expect God to hear our words. And He will act for us because of the words that we speak, because of the humility of our heart before this great God. And yes, we know everything is according to God's will in God's timetable. But I'm here to tell you that attitude of humility and setting our heart to understand, God notices that. He pays attention to that in us. And remember why the angel came. He came to reveal to Daniel prophetic visions of things to come. Likely things to come in our lifetime. Verse 14. We're still in Daniel 10. Verse 14. It says, now the angel says to Daniel, now I have come to make you understand what will happen to your people in the latter days. For the vision refers to many days yet to come. And when he has spoken such words to me. So what does he speak? The angel tells Daniel about things to come in the last days. What is Daniel's reaction to hearing the words, the description of what's going to take place in the last days? What's his reaction? I turned my face toward the ground and I became speechless. And suddenly, one having the likeness of the sons of men touched my lips. And then I opened my mouth and I spoke, saying to him who stood before me. Again, let's notice Daniel's reaction to seeing what's going to happen in the last days. My Lord, because of the vision, because of what you showed to me, my sorrows have overwhelmed me, and I have retained no strength. It took everything out of him. For how can this servant of my Lord even talk with you, my Lord, And as for me, no strength is in me now, nor is there any breath left in me. Does this happen to us when we today see the fulfillment of what he saw? The horrible things that are going on around us today. And yet we know more and worse is yet to come. Things that will happen in our nation, to our nation, and in our world. And when we read about it, when we think about it, when we watch the headlines, when we watch the news, it can be very disturbing. Very disturbing. Sometimes we don't want our children around. We don't want them to even see these things or to hear about them. And we're seeing more and more disturbing things every day. I believe if we had the vision that Daniel had, I suspect we would be weak and helpless and breathless also if we knew the full extent. So apparently we don't really grasp what it's going to be like, as apparently Daniel did. And we're about to live in it. But notice what happens next. Verse 18. Then again, the one having the likeness of a man touched me, and he strengthened me. And he said to me, O man greatly beloved, fear not. Peace be to you. Do we have peace today when we're living this? We need to be at peace. Yes, be strong. And so when he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, let my Lord speak, for yes, you have strengthened me. So do you see the source of our courage and strength? God says, trust me. God says, be strong. I'm right here with you. You really do have nothing to fear. I'm right here, and I'm God. So we're talking about the phrase, fear not, in its context. What's happening all around it? Given what we've just read in Daniel about Bible prophecy, and Daniel's fear of what he saw, and given about what we are living in today, living the reality of partially, to some extent, of what Daniel saw in his vision, what about us? We do believe we are at the threshold of the Great Tribulation, and we know we are living in fearful times because we are afraid, and we are, again, we're living it. It's here. To some extent, and I believe to a great extent, the words in Daniel are meant for us today. Those words that we've just read. I started working on this sermon about a week and a half ago. And the news headlines then, it was all about the riots. You see, you saw it every day. What's happening in Ferguson? The looting, the burning. Hearing about the uncontrolled spread of Ebola from one country to another. And, of course, the gruesome story of journalist James Foley that we don't even want to talk about. And we saw it on our, if you watching it, had it on, there it was, that orange suit, and you can just see it, and it just turns your stomach. They vow to carry out more, you know. Just yesterday, Great Britain elevated their terrorism alert to severe, meaning that they feel an attack on English soil is imminent. Russia is invading the Ukraine. That's today's headlines. What will the headlines be tomorrow? So the phrase, fear not, takes on new meaning for us, doesn't it? Yet God is still very much in charge of events in the world. God is very much in charge of events in the church and in our personal lives. And we need to believe that and never forget it. Because that same encouragement that he has given to God's people throughout all the ages, he gives to us today. These words are for us. Isaiah 51. This is speaking to us. Isaiah 51, verse 7. Notice who he's speaking to. Listen to me, he says. Listen to me, you who know righteousness, you people in whose heart is my law. If that's not us, who is it? So he says to us, do not fear. Do not fear the reproach of men. Do not be afraid of their insults. Now, perhaps some of us are experiencing that right now. Have in the past, we might next week, next month, people insulting us, making fun of us, mocking us, reviling us, scorning us. Now that can be tough to deal with. We can expect it. We can expect it to increase. Prophecies show that these things are going to turn to actual violence against some someday. In Matthew chapter 10 and verse 20, again, verse 21, from an unexpected source, these scornings and mockings and revilings and beatings and worse comes from a place we would not have expected. Matthew 10:21, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father will deliver up his child. Children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But he who endures to the end will be saved. So this seems to be telling us that an intense time of hatred and persecution is coming against the people of God. And that's something that we are warned about. And that is something that we are told we're going to have to endure until the end. Whether that means the end of our lives or to the end of this age. And yet we're told, do not fear. And we read something like that, how can I help but be afraid? I'm a human being. Of course I'm afraid. Fear not. I am with you. Luke 12. God shows us here the extent to which He's trying to make a point here, how much we really need to trust Him and not be afraid, even though it seems natural that we would be. He's saying, I've got a story to tell you. Luke 12 and verse 4. And I say to you, my friends, do not be afraid of those who would kill the body. Because after that, there's no more that they can do. I'll show you who you should fear. Fear him who, after he's killed you, has power to cast you into hell, into eternal death. Yes, fear him. So we're to fear God. The right fear of God. But a recognition that if we turn our back and reject God, okay, now that's something to really be afraid of. I'll show you real fear. But then he said, don't be afraid. He's not expecting that outcome. He's just saying that's who you should really fear, not man, because I can resurrect you. I can also put you permanently to sleep. Now he says to us, verse 6, aren't 5 sparrows sold for 2 copper coins, and yet not even one of them is forgotten before God? A sparrow can fall out of the tree out here, and God knows it. And here's something sometimes we think is a little humorous. The very hairs of your head are all numbered. To some, it's a greater challenge than others. Do not fear. You, my children, you are more value than sparrows. He's trying to tell us, I know how to take care of you. So God shows us by this remarkable statistic of knowing the hairs on our head, you know, I'm not very far away. I'm right here. I could even count the hairs on your head. He is acutely aware of us. He is acutely involved with us. Now we've got some fathers here that have little boys. Fathers know about their little boys, don't they? Very aware, very involved. So imagine how a father knows his little boy. Well, God is our father, and we're his little children. Same analogy, only greater. His love for us as our father is unimaginable, unfathomable. We cannot comprehend his love for us. And so that great father who loves us to a degree we can only imagine through how a father loves a child. We can only get a glimpse of that. That same father looks down at us and he says, don't be afraid. Don't fear. Now, if that's the case, how can we be afraid? We can't. It doesn't make sense. It's not logical for us to be afraid. If this great God, our Father, our Dad, is telling us that, why would we be afraid? He wants us to overcome the natural inclination to be afraid, to rise above that, and trust Him. Trust in His ability to deliver us from evil. He says, don't fear, trust me. I promise, I will take care of you. I'm God, I promise. Don't fear, I'm here. Trust me. And yet, I'm just not sure. Our world is falling apart. Again, a great understatement. Collapsing all around us. And yes, many are very fearful and scared of what's happening. Recently, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel was quoted as saying about the ISIS threat. Now, you've heard this, if you've been paying attention to the news at all. The sophistication, wealth, and military might of Islamic State militants represents a major threat to the United States that may surpass that once posed by Al-Qaeda. They are an imminent threat to every interest that we have, whether it's in Iraq or anywhere else. They are beyond just a terrorist group. They marry ideology, a sophistication, and military prowess. They are tremendously well-funded. Yes, this is beyond anything we have ever seen. Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel. Now, when you hear things like that being said by our leaders today, that is significant. They're onto something. They know something they're not telling us. There is clear and present danger. Great Britain knows it too. But that's only one threat of multiple threats to our society, to our lifestyle. There's many more. And yet in the middle of all this, when we hear things like that, and when we see it, we have our God, our Father, telling us in the pages of this Bible, do not fear. Do not be afraid. And we say, that doesn't make sense. It is in the context of the Great Tribulation that God is now telling His people once again, do not fear. He's telling us that today, just before. And yet all these scriptures that we're reading, they've been here all along that we could have read. They were here 40, 50 years ago. They'll be here 40, 50 years from now. Let's ask if Psalm 91 really means anything to us. Yeah, we've read Psalm 91 before. But let's review it yet again in light of what we're talking about today. In Psalm 91 and verse 5, again, it's timely to go over these things once in a while, especially going over with your family. Because parents, we don't want our children to be afraid, okay? We've got to give them some confidence, some hope, some reassurance. And we read to them, Psalm 91, verse 5, you shall not be afraid of the terror by night, or the arrow that flies by day. Again, this is written in their language. Apply it, change the words to our time today. Or of the pestilence that walks in darkness, or destruction that lays waste at noonday. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand. It will not come near you. Verse 10, no evil shall befall you. Not any plague shall come near your dwelling. For he shall give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. And so we have all this talk about safety and protection from evil that's all around us. Why is that? Why can we bank on that? Why can we count on this safety, this protection from diseases or from nuclear warfare or whatever it is, a terrorism attack? Well, let's go back and read why we receive this protection. If you notice back up in verse 2, It says, I will say of the Lord. Now, this is what we need to be saying. Okay? He is my refuge, my fortress. He is my God. In Him I will trust. Do we say that? Do we live that? Verse 9. Because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, because you've made Him your dwelling place, we've got to make God where we live. He lives in us. Verse 14. Because He has set His love upon me, therefore I will deliver Him. I will set Him on high because He knows my name. So what we have here are three basic requirements of protection. They were, number one, trust God. Number two, dwell with Him and He with you. And number three, love Him. Trust God, live with Him, love Him. And we need to ask how well we're doing with these. I can't answer that for you. I can only answer it for me. But I submit that if you would do these things, your fear, anxiety, apprehension, it will go away. Why? Because we have a promise in 1 John chapter 4. 1 John 4. In verse 17. What does John talk a lot about? The love of God. That's where we're going to focus for a little while. 1 John 4:17. Love has been perfected among us in this. So this is how we have love perfected in us. That we may have boldness in the day of judgment. Now, when is the day of judgment? If we're going to have boldness in the day of judgment sometime in the future after the return of Christ? We're going to stand before the judgment seat of God. I'm bold. I'm going to be here today. Look at what I've done. No, I believe our day of judgment is right now, isn't it? We're going to have boldness in the day of judgment. Because as He is, as Christ is, so are we in this world. Or in other words, we're to be like Christ in the world. How was Jesus Christ in the world? Did Jesus have fear in the world? He knew what was coming to Him. Did He have fear? No. Faced it with courage. There is no fear in love. But perfect love casts out fear. Perfect love casts out fear because fear involves torment. Or fear involves apprehension. Or fear of being punished. A torment and anxiety. Fear involves that. But he who fears has not been made perfect in love. Otherwise, you wouldn't have fear. Well, so we're not to be fearful. We're reading over and over, do not fear. But we just read here a solution. Wait a minute. Perfect love casts out all fear. Well, how do we know we have that? How do we know we have perfect love? How do we know we have the love of God? Which is perfect love. All right, 1 John 2. Back a couple of chapters. How do we have the love of God that will cast out fear? 1 John 2:3. Now by this we know that we know Him, if we keep His commandments. He who says, oh, I know Him, but he doesn't keep His commandments, pretty strong language here, he's a liar. There is no truth in him. But whoever keeps His word, whoever keeps His commandments, truly, it says, the love of God is perfected in Him. That's what we're looking for. That perfect love that will cast out all fear. How do we get it? By keeping the commandments. It says, by this we know that we are in Him. He who says he abides in Him, that's what we're saying by our presence here today. He who says he abides in Him ought himself also to walk just exactly as the way He walked. So there it is. That's our key today. If we are diligently obeying God, keeping His commandments, putting on holiness, righteousness every day, then the love of God, it dwells with us. It is in us. It's part of us. Perfect love is in us. Perfect love is in the process of, what's it doing? It's doing its work. It's casting out fear. We can't have fear if we have God's love. It will cast it out. We have nothing to fear, no matter what happens, because we know we are in the hands of a loving God. Where else would you rather be than in Daddy's hands? There's a song about that, right? When a child is afraid, Mr. Reisdorf, where does a child go when a child is afraid? He runs to Daddy's arms. And Daddy holds him and protects him. That's what we do with God. No better place to be. Perfect love, you see. And the child knows where perfect love is. His love of his father has cast out all of his fear. The child doesn't fear, no matter who comes around. Even if I come around, he's not afraid. So we've got a responsibility to come to that point in our lives today. Do not fear and do not be afraid. Why not? Brethren, it all comes back to our purpose in life. Why are you born? Why were you born? Why were you called? We've got to answer some basic questions once in a while. I'm sure we'll talk about this at the feast. So let's project once again into that future, into the Feast of Tabernacles time, just a little bit. And let's consider where we are as the world tomorrow, as the millennium opens. These first few hours, these first few days of the world tomorrow, whatever the population is, I suspect several million, will be in fear and hopeless. And I believe still that many of these survivors will believe that their death is yet imminent. That they'll believe Armageddon, you know, the end of the, you know, all human life is extinct. They can't imagine how they've lived so far. But what has just happened in Jerusalem? They're not sure. There's been a devastating earthquake, one like they've never experienced before. It's a 10. The mountains moved. They have survived the giant hailstones. There is no fresh water. All the green grass is dead. And now it looks to them like there's been some sort of an alien invasion. What was that in the sky? Could that really have been Jesus Christ? Oh, it was the Antichrist. How are we going to survive another day? And they won't be expecting what's about to happen. Isaiah 40. Look what else happens in these opening moments after the return of Jesus Christ. Isaiah 40, verse 9. They are going to hear some words proclaimed to them. God will have a way to get His message across. Jesus Christ will have a way to get His message across. From Mount Zion. From the Mount of Olives. Verse 9, Isaiah 40. O Zion, again another name for Jerusalem, you who bring good tidings. We've got good news to tell you, world. Get up into the high mountain, O Jerusalem, you who bring good tidings. Lift up your voice with strength. Lift it up. Don't be afraid. And say to the cities of Judah, behold, this is your God. We kind of have symbolic language here. We've got Jerusalem, the city of Jerusalem, being personified here. And she's told, the city is told, to not be afraid. But rather, Jerusalem, lift up your voice and shout it to all the countryside. Shout it to all the neighboring cities all around so everybody can hear you. And she tells them, don't be afraid. Behold, this is your God. And what is proclaimed once they have the attention of the people? Verse 1. Comfort. Oh yes, comfort my people, says your God. Speak comfort to Jerusalem and cry out to her. Your warfare has ended. Your sins are forgiven. Can you imagine hearing that after what you've been through? There is now no more fear. The wars are over. It's time for peace. My sins are forgiven. There's talk of forgiveness for what you've done wrong. They're talking about a new world. This is a new world order. Isaiah 35 and verse 1. They're going to begin to see this with their eyes. Isaiah 35, verse 1, the wilderness and the wasteland will be glad for them. The desert will rejoice and blossom as a rose, and it will blossom abundantly, and it will rejoice with joy and singing. And the glory of Lebanon shall be given to it, the excellence of Carmel and Sharon. And they will see the glory of the Lord, the excellency of our God. So strengthen the weak hands, and make firm the feeble knees. And say to those who are perhaps still fearful hearted, be strong and do not fear. And that's the message that we will be proclaiming to the people in the opening hours and days of the world tomorrow. Don't be afraid. Again, notice why not. Verse 4, behold, your God will come with vengeance, with the recompense of God, with the divine retribution, with the revenge of God. He will come and He will save you. And fear begins to go away because something has changed. There is no fear because now there is no doubt that there is a God, that this Jesus Christ, the Son of God, in power and glory, is in full control and His saints with Him. He has dealt with the cause of evil and war and death and destruction. That's gone. It's over. And this great God, this Jesus Christ, says, I'm going to deal with you now. I'm going to change your life. But again, brethren, for us, that's today for us. He's doing the same thing with us right now, this very day. And that's why we don't fear today, despite what we see, because we know God's on our side. We know God will fight our battles for us. We know God will intervene on our behalf. We know, we believe God when He says, I will keep evil away from you. He's promised. He says, I will save you. He's promised that many times through the many years. And we have come to believe it, to have faith in it, to trust Him. Because we've seen it in action. We've seen God's promises fulfilled in our lives before, and we trust Him. Now notice the result of all this for the people of the world tomorrow. Verse 5. What's going to happen to these people? The eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. That's literal and spiritual as well. And the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the dumb will sing. For water shall burst forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. In verse 10, the ransomed of the Lord will return, and they'll come to Zion with singing, with everlasting joy on their head, and they will obtain joy and gladness, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. That will happen then, but this is what must happen in our lives now. As members of the Church of God today, we must experience that right now. All those things. Our spiritual eyes and ears have already been healed and opened that we can hear and we can see. And as a result, we sing God's praises. We're filled with happiness and joy because of how we know God's working. God's working in my life, and I know it. I feel it. I see it. I know He's there. And I know He protects us. He protects me, my family. He'll provide for me, for my family, for you. And we do not fear. So are we at that point in our lives yet? Can we proclaim with confidence that we do not fear what man can do? Are we really courageous and determined in the face of extreme danger and trouble that's coming to us and to our nation? You know, even though, yes, we're close to these things, and we can see the headlines are someplace else right now. They're not in North Carolina yet. We can still go to the store, and the shelves are full. We can go to the restaurants and buy whatever we want. We live in a land of plenty. We have electricity. We have fresh water. We have food to eat. We have money to buy the things that we need. We can go to work. We can buy gasoline to come to services each week. And life goes on as normal today in North Carolina. But we have been warned and we have been told things are going to change. They didn't change yet. Might change tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, 5 years. When changes come and when things are not so easy anymore, will we remember this? And will we still say, I do not fear. I'm not afraid. Or when that time comes, will we be afraid and wondering and doubting and apprehensive and say, I'm not so sure? Because we've got to take some time to consider what the future is going to be like. Yes, we've done it before, but we need to be aware of it, to think about it, to talk about it. A time worse than ever has been in human history. We want to be protected from it. We trust that we will be. I trust God. Will I still trust Him? Will I believe that He is my deliverer? There's a question asked in Luke 18 and verse 8 that says, will God find faith on the earth? There's a reason that's there. It implies the church may be reduced to a small number. Perhaps not that many that will have the faith to endure to the end. But the point is, the faith, even of the faithful, will be challenged. It may have almost failed because of the conditions that will be so difficult when Christ finally does intervene. It says that even the belief of the elect may fail, may be deceived, unless you are close to God, unless you have the love of God, unless you have exercised and strengthened your belief, your faith in advance. You've got time. You cannot wait until a crisis arises and then say, oh, now I'll start to build my faith like a rock. You better do it yesterday. In Luke 22, verse 31, let me just read it for sake of time. The Lord said, Simon, Simon, indeed Satan has asked for you. This is Luke 22, 31. Satan has asked for you that he may sift you as wheat, but I've prayed for you that your faith should not fail. When you return to me, strengthen your brethren. He's saying that to us. Yes, Satan wants God's people to fail in the time of the end. He's always wanted us to fail. Will our faith fail? Do we have the confidence to know that our faith is strong and immovable? Psalm 18. This is a place for you to go. We'll read these quickly. Psalm 18, a place where you can go to read about trusting God for His deliverance. These scriptures need to be part of your life. Psalm 18, verse 1. I will love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock, my fortress, my deliverer, my God, my strength, in whom I will trust, my shield, the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. I will call upon the Lord, who is worthy to be praised, and so shall I be saved from my enemies. Verse 17, He delivered me from my strong enemy, from those who hated me, for they were too strong for me. They confronted me in the day of my calamity, but the Lord was my support, and He brought me out into a broad place, and He delivered me because He delighted in me. And the Lord rewarded me according to my righteousness. According to the cleanness of my hands, He has recompensed me. For I have kept the ways of the Lord, and I have not wickedly departed from my God. Do those scriptures mean anything to you? Do they describe you? Can you say those words with confidence? Will you be able to say those same words tomorrow when things change here in North Carolina? We cannot be afraid. We must trust God. And so basically the sermon is over. But as we conclude, let's turn to Revelation 21. And let's consider this very carefully. Is what we have spoken about today, not having fear in the face of difficult times, trusting God. Is all this really all that important to God? Really? Not my answer, but God's answer to you is yes, this is very important to me. Verse 7. Revelation 21, verse 7. He who overcomes will inherit all things. I will be his God and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, abominable, murderers, sexually immoral, sorcerers, idolaters, and all liars will have their part in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, the second death. What do we just read? If you are fearful, if you are, shall we say, a coward, unbelieving, don't really trust, that puts you in the same category as a murderer who will not inherit the kingdom of God. Why? Why is that? Why is it in that same category? That seems like it doesn't balance. It's very simple, really. If we are afraid and fearful, after reading everything that we have read today, and there's so much more, and yet we could dare, after reading all of God's promises of deliverance and protection, His admonitions to trust Him and to fear Him, if after all that, if we are still afraid, then we make God out a liar. And He won't have that. He says, you don't trust me. You don't believe me. And I'm God. And that's unacceptable to God. And He will have no part of that in us because He's our Father. He loves us. It's the same thing. We don't want our little children to be afraid in their homes of their daddies, do we? We want our little children to trust us. That they know they'll care for us, that we will keep them safe. It's the same thing with our Father, with our Dad. He says, trust me, believe me, do not fear, do not be afraid. Daddy has you safely in His arms.